one of my new favorites. Right here. One of my favorite ones you can hear at a rodeo. Not a lot of people play this one. It's another rock and roll day. Raise a little hell. Which means, of course, have a good time. We got a guy here that knows about having a good time. A guy I'm so glad I finally get to have on. As I am by myself this week, as Hambone is producing the San Angelo Stock Show and Rodeo, so I'm flying solo without my amigo this week, but that's all right, because I got a very cool dude on today that has done a lot in rodeo, but has done a lot of other stuff that I'm going to ask questions about, because I don't know. Now, one of our big Rump Chat Raws that we had out was with Benji Bindley, the great Benji, Sound Man of the Year, former announcer, worked for the Bad Company Rodeo, done a lot of cool stuff. And in that, if you guys remember that Rump Chat, when he's talking about who got him started in music, he said Ben Benavides. And today on Rump Chat, we actually have the Ben Benavides here in Austin, Texas. Ben, welcome to Rump Chat. We're glad to have you on.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Even though I'm kind of flying solo this week, me and Bone both, even though he's not here with us today, but we're glad to have you on. And, I can't remember, I think it was in Burke last summer, where I was asking you about that. Like, I had no clue about the backstory about, that you were working at a bar in San Antonio.
A nightclub DJ.
So I want to get started off with that story before we bell anything else. Tell us about working at the nightclub and Benji and how that whole deal got rolling.
Okay, so I started in the nightclubs back in 1981 as a DJ. And it was late 1986.
Yeah.
That I was DJing at a club in San Antonio called the Cold River Cattle Company. It was owned by Ralph Mitchell. Ralph Mitchell, his family's from Bandera, and he was a Texas Circuit finalist in team roping. And he owned the bar, and he was good friends with Mac Altizer. And, let me back up just a little bit. So I was DJing there at the club, and to recap the story that Benji told, Benji was in the club one night and had written down a request on a business card and had brought it up to the DJ booth and dropped it off to me. I was playing music that night. And so when I read the request, I told him, I can work that in. And then when I flipped the card over after he had walked away, I saw that it said that he was an auctioneer. And I had always wanted to learn how to be an auctioneer.
Yeah.
And so I got on the microphone and I paged him to come back up to the DJ booth and brought him around in the back. And we were up in the booth talking, and I told him that I've always wanted to learn how to be an auctioneer. And he said, well, I've always wanted to learn how to play music. And coincidentally, at the time, I needed a part-time DJ. And I said, I'll tell you what, I'll hire you as my part-time DJ. I'll teach you how to play music. You teach me how to be an auctioneer. And that was our agreement. And Benji came to work for me, and I taught him how we use music as a production element in a nightclub atmosphere.
Yeah.
And so Benji came on as a part-time DJ working there with me at Cold River Cattle Company. Now back to the story that I started, Ralph was friends with Mac Altizer. And Ralph had the idea to put on a rodeo in a vacant lot across the street from the club during the day.
In San Antonio?
In San Antonio. He wanted to put on a rodeo in the vacant lot across the street and then have everybody come to the club for a concert that night. And so Mac brought in portable arena. Mac brought in livestock. We got bleachers. And when Ralph started shopping for rodeo announcers and found out what rodeo announcers cost, Ralph was like, I can have my DJ do it. And so Ralph came to me and said, Ben, I want you to announce my rodeo. I was like, Ralph, I've never announced a rodeo in my life. He said, no, but you used to rodeo and you understand about rodeo. And I said, yeah. He said, you know how to talk on a microphone. You MC all of my promotions and contests here in the bar. I said, yeah. He said, so get in the arena, talk on a microphone, and tell people about rodeo. And I said, Well, if you put it like that, I can do that. I said, but I want to go and do the rodeo the same way that we do productions here inside the
club. Your DJing.
Right, because when we would do a tight fitting jeans contest or a best chess contest or a dance contest, so the part-time DJ would come in and go into the DJ booth and he would do the music behind the event, and I would be out on the dance floor with the microphone emceeing the event, whatever it was.
Right.
And so the part-time DJ would be doing the music in the booth and I'd be emceeing out on the dance floor. I said I wanted to do the same way in the rodeo arena. And Ralph said, I don't care how you do it. I just want you to do it. So we took and set up a sound system over there, and Benji came in to play music during the rodeo while I announced it, and we did it just like we did a promotion in the club, a contest in the club, and it worked great. And I mean, and that started it, and it's gone on from there.
So I want to get back to the bars in San Antonio here in a minute, but backstory on Ben. You've been involved in rodeo for a long time. As an announcer, you got high-def rodeo, big screens, which one of the best big screens going down the road right now.
Thank you.
You also do music production, regular production. I mean, you know, a lot of time we talk about our guys, we call them the Swiss Army knives, you know, the guys that can do about all, you know. Casey Harp, he can do it all. Dusty Duba, that works for Sammy, works for everybody, can do it all. You've done a lot of it. So take us back through your rodeo career. Like, where did you get started in rodeo? And I mean, and here you are still with multiple different businesses in the rodeo business, still rocking and rolling.
So I rodeoed. I never rodeoed competitively as a professional,
right.
or even academically. I just, when I was in high school, I used to go to little open rodeos, little local open rodeos. And where I grew up, outside of Helotes, Texas, where I grew up, there was a neighborhood arena right down the road. And every Friday and Saturday night, they would have a little open rodeo and then a outdoor patio dance. And so a lot of my friends that I went to high school with, that's where we spent our weekends,
right?
At the rodeo and dancing. And so I rodeoed a little bit in high school, but then after high school, you know, work started and I got away from rodeo,
right?
Until I was working at that club in 1987. And then when I announced that first rodeo, I knew that this is what I wanted to do. I love working with an audience. I love enhancing an audience's experience.
And, yeah.
And as a DJ, you have a big effect on that, on the audience's experience in the club, you know. And it's gratifying when you put on a song and it packs the dance floor. It's gratifying when you put on a song and people scream because they're excited to hear that song and they can't wait to get out there and dance to it. So when I started doing rodeo, I announced that first rodeo, and I realized the crowd interaction from that, I knew this was what I wanted to do.
Well, and so the one other thing that I think is so cool was when you're talking about working the nightclubs. Because, you know, in Rum Chat, we talk a lot about the old party days. And, I mean, I know that it's nothing comparable. But, like, I don't anymore because I'm old. But, man, I used to love to go. We had a bar in Alva, Oklahoma, and a lot of our listeners know it, the Nightlight, N-I-T-E, the Nightlight. And, I mean, it was the thing to do. And, I mean, this was in, you know, early 2000s. You know, nightclubs, I've always thought they were, like, I've kind of had this weird infatuation with them. I think I would have been so good at that. Because, like, it's so funny, and this is not the same, but you know, one of my favorite movies of all time, of course, is Urban Cowboy. Mm-hmm. And, like, the nightlight, you know, the bar has got a feel. And, like, you know, traveling around rodeos, you know, like I said, I'm not really a late nighter anymore, but I still like to go out to some of those bars. The bar scene in the 80s in San Antonio had to be the tits. Was it not wild?
It was completely different.
No Facebook, no yep. Instagram, just shaking asses.
Things that would be fingernails on a chalkboard now, like drink and drown nights. Drink and Drown. You paid a $12 cover charge to get in the door, and it was free alcohol from 8 until 11.
Drink and Drown?
Drink and Drown. We had 25-cent long neck nights. I mean, you'd go and buy an entire case of beer. They'd put two scoops of ice in a cardboard box full of long necks. You'd go set it at your table, and I mean, just all night long. I mean, it's so different now.
Yeah, I mean, it's so you'll never now. Match that. But that had to have a feel like, did you have your locals that come in all the time and your new guys? Like, I bet being in the bar all the time and DJing especially and being a part of that, you got to see, did you ever see some wild shit?
Oh, so much. And
tell me a few stories about some wild bar shit.
Wild story. Let me tell you a sad part about the nightclub life. I'll think of a wild story. Sad part about the nightclub life is that it's the same in the rodeo industry.
Yeah.
There's people who treat this as a profession, and there's people who treat this as a gig.
Right.
They're just here for a good time.
Yeah. You know?
And I watched the nightclub life eat up so many people.
Really?
They were only there for a good time. They did not understand that this was a career and this was a profession.
Right.
Yeah, you don't think about that part.
I never thought, I'm glad you brought that up. I never thought about that.
Yeah, I watched the nightclubs just eat up so many people because they were just there for a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I never, yeah, I mean, that makes sense, though.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think it would have been pretty neat to go, because like I said, I say this all the time, I'm like, man, social media has made shit so much harder. But, back when you could go to the bar and no one knew you were at the bar and you didn't get tagged at the bar.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a whole lot more anonymity.
Yeah.
Back in those days than there is now.
So when you're talking, you're 100% on with production about the the flow of the evening. So did you guys? Okay, this is going to be a dumb question, but I'm going to ask you a lot of dumb questions because it's Rump Chat. But did you guys have a plan? Say Saturday night at what was the nightclub called?
Where I started working with Benji, where Benji started working with me, was at Cold River Cattle Company.
Cold River Cattle Company.
But I worked for the company, I worked for the corporation that owned Midnight Rodeo and Dallas and Wild West.
Oh, dang.
All of those nightclubs. I worked for them for 14 years.
So did you guys all get together and be like, okay, it's Saturday, so for your promotions on the best butt contest and shit like that and
yes.
Drink specials, that's all, that's something that you would sit down and be like, all right, let's hammer this out and.
And we would lay out plans for a month that this is what we were going to do on these days, you know. And
really?
So, oh, yeah. And so we knew what content, because you want to promote those contests because you want to get those contestants in there. And I mean, if you're going to do a bikini contest in the summertime,
yeah,
you got to give girls a heads up so they know to bring their bikini. Two, you've got a plan for having a dressing room for them because you can't expect them all to go into the ladies' restroom,
right.
You know, and get dressed and made up and ready for this contest. So yeah, there's a lot of planning into putting on those promotions in the club for sure.
Dude, I tell you what, if you have kids in the car or wherever you're listening, you might cover them, but you know what's crazy? So when I first started going to San Antonio, hauling stock down for Benny, there's a bar in China Grove was a real shithole. And they had a contest, I didn't go, but they had a contest called Hottest Chick with the Biggest Bush. Have you ever heard of something like that?
No.
They did. And so, they were, I mean, there was, there's these, I thought it was a joke. I mean, obviously, curious to know about it, but that was one of their, you had to be a super hot chick, and you had to wear the bar-issued bikini bottom, and, yeah, you're judged on how hot you were. You couldn't just have a big bush. You had to be hot and have a big bush at the same time.
That contest wouldn't fly today, would it?
No. Actually, it might be better today, you know? I mean,
we have...
I have that at a rodeo. Justin, what are you doing in the arena? Actually, Wayne, I got a new clown act tonight. Come on in, ladies. Just kidding.
We had contests that would push the edge of the envelope as far as being risque.
Yeah.
But still remained classy.
Is there rules, or I mean, laws or Like, if you have, like, a wet t-shirt contest, you have to buy a... This is going to sound dumb, but is there, like, a permit for that? Just because I don't know how that all works.
Well, and I don't know the laws now because I've been out of the bars for so long, but I do know that the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission has parameters that this is allowed with this kind of a license and this is allowed with that kind of a license. And so there are limitations as to what can be allowed in the bar.
Yeah.
But, like... We used to have one contest that was called a ping pong ball race, and so we would sign up couples to compete in this ping pong ball race, and we'd be giving away $100 or $200 or something like that, something stupid. Well, we'd sign up couples for this race, guys and girls, and we'd get all the contestants all lined up on the dance floor, and we'd have all the guys stand up on the dance floor, all the girls were standing across from them, and the girls had the ping pong ball, and then on your mark, the girls were all blindfolded. On your mark, get set, go. And the girls would have to start the ping pong ball up the right pants leg. And then with their hands on the outside, they had to push the ping pong ball all the way up to the top, around turn number one, and then all the way back down out the other pants leg.
That is awesome. What was that game called?
The ping pong ball race.
It was just a ping pong ball race.
That's all we called it. I mean, that's all what it was.
Yeah. So, but that's what I was thinking about. I mean, because you just don't know, like, especially anymore. There's so many rules and everything is so different than the glory days of the late nights. Like, I watched these YouTube videos. There's like this nostalgia page where it's talking about the old days, and it's got all these high-waisted Rockies and mm-hmm. these hot chicks, you know, line dancing and shit.
Justin Roper boots, big hair.
Oh, big hair. We actually had a whole, Garrett Yergin was on, and we had a whole episode about Big Bush Country, you know, from, you know, back in the 80s. And on a note like that, we, the hottest one, Lori Morgan. Remember Lori Morgan?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, when you're DJing, like, you play, was there, like, a certain recipe, like, we're going to play a couple really pumped up songs, then we're going to drop it down and go slow for a minute?
Oh, there's an entire, and it's funny, this conversation.
For the flow, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, like, there's an entire program format for the entire night.
No shit.
I'm not kidding. And this, it's funny, this conversation, I hadn't talked about this in years, and this conversation just came up 2 days ago, the same thing, but... So we were DJs, and we had a 14 song format that we would repeat all night long. And so we would start off with a slow song, and then we would go into a waltz, and then we would start into slow two steps, and then we would increase energy and increase speed throughout that 11 song country set.
Right.
Then you would follow it up with three non-country songs, dance songs, whether it was rock and roll or pop or whatever. You would play three non-country songs, and then you would repeat the cycle again, starting off slow and build up your speed and build up your energy through your country set. And I was explaining that there's two different styles of country. There's a two-step and then there's a three-step. Well, scientifically, people didn't realize that when we would start playing the two steps, we would play one style of music for three songs or for four songs. Then we would change to the other style of dance. And everybody would leave the dance floor, and those people that were sitting for the last three or four songs would come onto the dance floor. We would rotate our dance floor because those that just came off the dance floor, they went to the bar.
Right.
And they went and bought a drink. These people who had been drinking... Now I've got them out on the dance floor. I'm going to keep them there for another 9 to 12 minutes. I'm going to get them hot, get them thirsty, and turn around and send them right back to the bar. So you're creating this heat and this thirst through the way that you're manipulating the dance floor.
I never have thought about that.
And then you've got people who don't country and western dance, and that's why we play the three non-country songs. And we play pop or we play rock to get them out there. They're out there for 9, 10, 11 minutes. They get hot and sweaty. They're ready for a good cold drink right to the bar.
Dude, that makes so much. See, I'm glad I asked that because, like, I get it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing, like, and you're involved with the rodeo portion of it. I think a lot of people at home don't always understand how produced rodeo is, you know? I have even rodeo people be like, oh, well, so when do you go? Do you just go out there whenever? No, there's, we go out at this point. We talk at this point. You know, our guide here at Rodeo Austin, we have a 25-page script for every night. So, I mean, it is well meticulated and thought through and planned and, you know, with promotions and ribbon boards. So, I mean, as far as, I always thought DJing would be so cool, but I never thought about, you know, the production side of it, you know? Because I didn't know, but, you know, I'm thinking DJ, what's up, everybody? You know, and spin some tunes and shit. But, I mean, to have the flow.
To have the flow, to work the room, to work the room in the most effective way to generate sales. Because that's what everything is designed around, is generating sales.
Right.
Because that's where the money comes from.
Yeah.
So when movie theaters have computer-generated effects in the movies, when they have the best sound system possible in a theater, when you are competing against that type of entertainment, you have to bring that level of technology if you're going to be competitive for the same entertainment dollars, because people only have so many entertainment dollars.
Yeah.
Are they going to spend it at a movie theater? Are they going to spend it at rodeo?
You know?
And so that's why production became so important, is because the entertainment dollar became so competitive.
Did you have back when we're still around there, did you guys start setting up screens in the bars? Because that became a thing even when I was in college, where, you know, they would have the bar and they had the big screen on each side, and a lot of time they would play the music video.
Yep.
I mean, then that's another thing that you do, is you do the big screens. Was that something that kind of got you on the big screens too in that time, or was that after that?
No, actually the big screens, I have to give all of the credit to my wife about that. Now learning how to set up sound systems, learning how to set up video systems, that I learned in the nightclubs, because yes, we did have those TVs around the bar. Yes, we would play videos. Yes, we would play sports. We would never show a boxing match, and we would never show a fight on any of those TVs.
Oh, because subliminally,
it incites,
especially in the bar, you know, there's always some asshole ready to fight.
Yep. So we would show sports, but we would never show a fight, never show a boxing match.
That makes 100%, because I don't know why, you know, I was stupid. I got into some fights back in the day, which was dumb. I mean, no one's ever win, but in bars, you know, that's,
yep,
people get to having too much fun.
And
how many bar fights? Was there bar fights quite a bit there?
Oh, all the time. Just like what you saw in the movie Urban Cowboy in the 80s. Yes, it was like that. And nobody pulled a knife. Nobody pulled a gun. Nobody went out to the truck and came back in and shot up the bar. I mean, you had a fight. You got thrown out. You tucked your tail. You jumped in your truck and you went home. I mean, it's a different day. It's a different day today than it was working in the nightclubs back then.
I know. So not that this is comparable, but one of my nephews watched Roadhouse, and it just blew his mind. Like, that's why I told him, my man, he used to be a guy who could punch somebody. And
yep.
He just worked it out. There wasn't a lawsuit, or there wasn't nothing bad. You know, people just used to land a blow or two. And, I mean, I got beat up several times in college. But, you know, I don't feel bad, because most of the time I had it coming. And I'm older. I'm wiser now. And I don't do that.
And all of that, all of those things are learning experiences. And it makes you who you are today, you know?
Yeah. You know, Benny Butler said, you know, we had weaned some bulls. So we had a whole pen full of these 2 and 3 year old bulls together at the ranch, and they are just beating the shit out of each other, hooking each other, running around. And he said, that's why you don't go to the bar. You get all them young bulls in there, start fighting with each other, see, trying to hook down each other and run each other over. And I was like, damn, that makes sense. You know,
Benny's got some wise words of wisdom.
Yeah. But yeah, that the boxing thing, I totally get that, because when we were at Rosenberg, Texas, and Chuck Swisher was fighting bulls, we went to B-Dubs, drank a bunch of beer, and watched a UFC fight. We get to the parking lot, and Chuck just loses his mind, and he's messing around, but he slaps me. Slaps the shit out of me, so I'd turn around and punch him, and the next thing you know, two friends, we're beating the shit out of each other. Then we got a ride back in the car back to the hotel, you know?
Yeah.
But so you got out of that, and you said your wife, she got you involved with the screen business. And so, you've been in the screen business a while.
So 2007 is when we bought our first video board.
Really?
Yeah, so what's that, 17 years ago?
God, it shouldn't be that long
ago. I know. So I had started off announcing rodeos, and back in those days, the announcer had to do his own music, and we started off with cassette tapes.
Yeah.
I'd go to a 50-head bull ride, and I'd have 60 cassette tapes set up with music, and we're constantly changing cassette tapes as we're trying to announce this bull ride. And I was doing rodeos and doing announcing and music, and then I got a call to go work the rodeo in El Paso. They already had an announcer, but they needed somebody to come and do music because he didn't do music. And coincidentally, it was Randy Corley. So they needed somebody to just come and do music. And I said, sure, I'll come and do that. And I went and I worked.
And at the time, that was probably unheard of, just to have a music guy.
Right, because it
wasn't a band.
Well, your open rodeos, your amateur rodeos, are very budget driven, and so yeah. you have to have an announcer with music too, because there just wasn't a budget for a music guy. El Paso was a bigger rodeo; it was a pro rodeo, you know, and so they had
Harry Vold had the rodeo.
Harry Vold had the money. He was the one who hired me.
Yeah,
and so I went and I worked that first rodeo in El Paso, and all I did was do music, and I fell in love with rodeo all over again. Like I said, I fell in love with rodeo the first time I announced it, and I knew that's what I wanted to do. When I went in 1999, when I went and I worked that first rodeo and did all I did was just music, I fell in love again, because now I was back to my DJ roots, and all I had to do was DJ. I didn't have to worry about announcing or where are we going or who was that, or all I had to do was just play music.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. And that started me in my music career, in my music director's career in rodeo, where I was just hiring to just do music and not announce. And that started in 99. In 2005 is when I met my wife, and coincidentally, we met on the internet, but the first time that we met in person, she flew to El Paso to come and see me at that rodeo.
Really?
That coincidentally, that was the first rodeo that she came to. And my wife has always been a serial entrepreneur, and when she saw what I did, she immediately got why I did it. She completely understood, one, working for yourself, two, being able to do music and be part of rodeo production and all of that. She got it right away. And so then a couple years later, she said, if we were going to expand your business, how would we do that? I said, buy a scoreboard. And this was still back in the day of the Cope scoreboards, you know, when U.S. Smokeless had the boards. And I said, buy a scoreboard. And she said, why? And I said, because you can do this, this, and this at the rodeo in addition to what we're doing already. And she goes, and how much can you charge for that? And I forget what the numbers were then, but so I gave her a number. And she said, okay, what's better than a scoreboard? I said, well, a video board. And she said, why? And so I told her why a video board was better. How much can you charge for that? And I gave her numbers. And she said, all right, well, we've got a little money here that my dad left me. Let's see if we can buy a video board. Here's a budget. Let's see what we can get. And our first video board was 6 foot tall and 12 foot wide. And it was mounted on a little bitty trailer, like these orange highway construction signs, those signs on the little trailer. Yep. It was a little video board on a little trailer like that, and that was the first one, and that's what got us started.
Did you have to run a hard wire off to your camera, straight to your board?
Well, from the camera to a processor, because the first one was just one camera, and they had the camera. All I did was just bring the video board, and we plugged the camera into the processor, which talks to the video board. Then I got with a video production crew that had a mixing console, that the cameras came into the mixing console, and the mixing console sent a signal out to the processor
for
the video board. Yeah, and for the first 7, 8, 9 years, I had a production company that would do all of the video production, would do all of the camera work.
Right.
We brought the video board, set up the video board. They brought all the cameras. They did the production. And we worked together like that for years.
Well, and I mean, you think how much it's changed in rodeo just from, even in our lifetime, we've went from a band to cassettes, from a band, 8-tracks, cassettes, CDs. Now we're all digital, and you go back, there was just the scoreboard with showing the back number, which I never really, you know, I thought the scoreboards were that effective except for advertising, you know.
Right.
Showing the top score, going from the scoreboard to the video board. Now we got digital boards now. I mean.
Yep. And TV coverage.
Yeah. And everything is so advanced, and it's crazy how fast it's happened. Mm-hmm. You know, starting from where you've started. I mean, think about your first board versus now.
Oh, I know.
You're hauling that monster that's hang from, you know, a telehandler and you know, the big boys.
And not only has the quality of the video screens improved, but such a change in graphics,
yeah,
too, because the graphics back then were just so elementary because we didn't have.
But everybody thought at the time, they're like, holy oh, yeah. shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
look at these graphics. This is amazing.
Yeah, but there was no Photoshop. There was no After Effects. There wasn't any of that kind of stuff back then.
Oh, yeah. It's like my kids playing when they go to my mom's house. I still got my old Nintendo there. It still works. So they're firing up Mario Brothers, and I remember when I was young and I got Super Mario Brothers, I'm like, holy shit, look at the graphics. This is amazing. And now you see these kids playing Madden and you can't even tell that it's a video game.
Right. It looks like real TV. Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, video board, whatever you want to call it, it has changed rodeo big time. I think it's actually changed a lot of sports because, like, at the rodeo, I watch people that buy expensive tickets. Half the time, they're watching the board instead of watching it right in the arena. And, like, at San Antonio, those boards are just unreal. They're at the Frost Bank Center. And then they got boards inside of the board.
Yep.
So, I mean, people are watching a live show on a screen when all they would have to do is look down at the arena. I mean, people are like, moths to the flame attracted to it.
Well, but see, that's, we talked about music being a production tool.
Yeah.
That's where the video board becomes a production tool, because why would people look at a video board if they can see the same thing in the arena?
Yeah.
So for a video board to be justifiable to a rodeo, you've got to be able to give the audience something that they can't see on their own. You know, when you take an audience inside that steer wrestling box,
right,
and so close that you can see the bead of sweat right here, or you can see the 5 o'clock shadow right here on that bulldogger's face before he nods for that steer, you know, they can't see that from their seats.
That's true.
They are getting an up close
like
view.
When they do the shots real close to the guy wrapping his hand.
And doing the tie, you know, or doing a throw,
yeah,
you know, all those things. When it happens so fast in the arena that they don't get a chance to catch it right away, and so being able to see it back on instant replay, like when you see a barrel racer that hips a barrel and she reaches back and she stands that barrel back up in real time. If you don't catch it, you missed it. But to be able to see that back on instant replay, and that's where a video board becomes a production tool for your event.
Well, I mean, you look at rodeos that, and I know this is so one of the most complained things for the people watching at home, not the in-house crowd. People complain all the time about the Kiss Cam. Well, the Kiss Cam at the event is unreal. Like, people love it. You know, people get into it and think it's hilarious. People at home watching on the Cowboy Channel, God, I wish they wouldn't show that stupid-ass Kiss Cam, you know. But that's another marketing tool, because these rodeos are selling the Kiss Cam for a large sponsor dollar.
Yep.
You know, and people dig it. Like, I wish that, I shouldn't even say that, because Hambone says I complain too much about the Cowboy Channel. But I really wish that the average rodeo fan at home, and I don't mean fan, I mean the dieharders that know, you know, mm-hmm. would understand that some of that stuff that we do in production is not to take away from the contestant, but to add to the overall experience to the person that we're trying to get to buy tickets.
And here's one thing that a TV audience doesn't understand. Okay? We're in the steer wrestling, and there is a barrier malfunction.
Yeah.
And the judges are having to work and fix this barrier because bungee cords broke or whatever it is, yep. a pulley broke, you know, a snapped, and we've got to get a new pulley, we got to get this one off. It's going to be 4 minutes, 5 minutes here for them to make this repair. Well, we can't stop the whole rodeo and just show the judges working on this, yeah. on this dog and shoot. So how do we cover this? How do we cover this? So the announcer turns and says, hey, let's do Kiss Cam. We've already got it planned. We know we can do it. Boom. We jump into Kiss Cam.
We're keeping the entertainment going.
And we're covering what is happening behind the scenes. Yeah. The TV audience doesn't understand that. And the announcer is not going to go, oh, well, we have a broken barrier at the dog and shoot, and so now let's go to Kiss Cam. They're not going to tell everybody why we're doing it. And that's the sad part about TV audiences getting an in-house production and not a TV telecast.
I know. I've preached it.
It's those are two different things. An in-house production, even though it's up on the video board and even though it's being done with video cameras, an in-house production is a completely different animal than a television telecast, a broadcast, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And the TV audience doesn't get that this isn't a telecast. It's an in-house production.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've talked about that so much on here, but even as much we talked about it, it's still whatever. But one more serious question before we get moving on to something more fun. Being in the video production portion of it, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I want to hear your thoughts, and I don't want to hear who you agreed with because we don't say that guy's name on here. But everybody, one of the hot topics that blows up nonstop for rodeos is video replay. If we had replay, we need replay. I agree. There's been many times when I was like, we need replay, but it's not that simple. We couldn't do it every rodeo. But being a video guy, a rodeo guy that's been doing it a long time, what's your thoughts, being a video guy, on the replay? Is it practical? Could it work? Is there a chance maybe in the future we would have something to pitch to rodeo to, hey, let's try this?
First, you have to look at what is required in order to do that. So when we go to a rodeo, we take three cameras with us, and we work those three cameras in four different positions during the entire rodeo so that we catch the action and put it up on the video board, mm-hmm. okay? That super tight shot of that bulldogger right before he nods his head does not have the barrier in the shot, okay? And so that camera cannot be used for a replay to see if the barrier broke
or see if it hung up on something or
exactly, because that's not what that camera is there for. And if you want to have replay on the barrier, now you have to have a second camera, one on the bulldogger, one on the barrier. And that's not
your general shot.
That's separate
yeah.
from the camera that's downfield to get the bulldogger coming off of his horse, and that's separate from the camera on the side to get that bulldogger when he turns that steer and makes the throw.
So you're talking three cameras just for one replay.
Just for the run, exactly. And then but the things that get questioned is, did the barrier malfunction? You've got to have a camera on that. In the team roping, was it a crossfire? Well, you've got one camera that's on the header catching that dally, and you've got another camera on the heeler waiting for that throw, and then you want to see that stretch. You don't have a camera isolated on the switch to see whether or not the switch was completed before the throw was made. So you have to have cameras isolated on these questionable things, and there's just not a budget to have that many more cameras.
The cost would probably be you'd have to have four additional cameramen
and
plus cameras. What's a camera cost?
Oh, $2,500, $3,000 for a
loop. You figure, worst case scenario, $12,000 in extra cameras, not alone.
Yeah.
Then you would have to have a replay official.
You have to have a replay official, and you have to have a replay technician, because I can't stop our video production video board to go and give replays to the replay official.
To go underneath the hood.
So now there's got to be a replay technician that can pull up those separate camera shots and give those to the replay official for him to review.
Dang.
So, yeah, you're talking about more equipment. You're talking about more personnel. I mean, you're talking about...
You'd have to have trained cameramen. You couldn't get a high school kid. You would have to have some guys that knew what they were looking for running.
So here's the interesting perspective on that. When my wife and I brought video production in-house, when we stopped using an outside company and we decided to hire our own camera operators and buy our own cameras and do our own production, when we did that, we hired professional camera operators to come and shoot rodeo. Do you know how hard it is to try and teach a non-rodeo person?
Oh, I can't imagine.
What each event is and what the focus points are during each event. And we fought with that for 2 years. And my wife said, we need to hire rodeo kids. We can teach them a camera.
You can teach a camera easier than you can teach a rodeo.
So let's hire people who already know rodeo. They already watch rodeo. They already know what shots they want to see.
Right.
We'll teach them how to operate a camera. And we did that, and it completely changed the quality of our production. And it was all my wife's idea on that.
That's awesome.
It's been great ever since then. So you say, well, you can't just hire a rodeo high school kid. They're the ones who know.
Well, I didn't mean a rodeo. But
I'm saying,
because there's a lot of places you go, they just have a random kid on a camera.
Right. Right.
Or they have
a committee volunteer that's on the camera. No, you've got to have somebody who knows rodeo, who knows what shots they need to get if you're going to have an effective instant replay program for rodeo.
So in conclusion on that, it could happen with enough funds
Yep. Yep.
And it wouldn't, you know, not every place to have, but moving on from that. So one other thing I want to ask you about, since it's full of my questions, you and your wife are big into Harley-Davidson motorcycles.
Yep.
And you guys ride motorcycles. You actually had your motorcycles flown to Hawaii, right?
Shipped to Hawaii, yeah.
Yep. So you could ride your Harley
yep.
in Hawaii.
Yep.
So when did you develop the love of those motorcycles?
So I rode motorcycles ever since I was a kid. I mean, when I got my driver's license, I started riding motorcycles. And I rode motorcycles all the way up until the time that my son was born in 1991. And then we were moving to Amarillo, and I needed moving money. And I sold the motorcycle for the move. And once you have kids, there's just never money.
Oh, I know. Trust me. I got triplets.
Yeah. So there's just never money for that again. So then fast forward, my wife, Jackie, took me to Hawaii for my 50th birthday. And as a birthday present, she rented a Harley over there for us to ride around on the island of Kauai. And that was really the perfect first place for her to get on a motorcycle, because she'd never been on a bike before and she was afraid of motorcycles. But the island of Kauai has a maximum speed limit of 35 miles anywhere on the island. 35 miles
an hour. I've never been.
At 35 miles an hour is the max speed limit. And so she rented a Harley as a birthday present, and we rode the Harley around Kauai there. At 35 miles an hour, and she enjoyed it way more than she thought she was going to. And so when we came home from that trip, she suggested that I had this old truck that I hadn't put 300 miles on it in a year because I was out rodeoing.
Yeah.
He's like, instead of having that truck, why don't you sell that truck and buy a motorcycle? And 2 weeks later, we had a motorcycle sitting in the driveway, and now my wife and I in the last 10 years, 12 years, we've probably put about 200,000 miles on them, our motorcycle, together. Yeah.
Dude, I got to tell you, like, it would take a lot of work to ride a motorcycle. I think about, especially during the summer when I'm out rodeoing, and you see all these guys ride motorcycles, and, like, we stopped at the Flying J in Cheyenne, and these guys come from Texas. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, my God, that, to me, that would be tough. It didn't seem like it would be that comfortable to ride a motorcycle for hundreds of miles a day, you know. Because, like, when you're in a car, you kick back, kick the cruise on, you know. But when you're on the motorcycle, you're there.
And motorcyclists at the same, by the same token, would say, I could not imagine spending 6 hours or 8 hours in a saddle on a horse.
Yeah.
You know, that has just got to be so uncomfortable. And
it's not, right?
It's not. And so the same thing with the motorcycles. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not.
So, like, where do you guys get with other friends and take off and go?
So,
'cause you see these groups of people all the time, and I always wonder, how do these guys all get together?
So a lot of it is just your friends. I mean, and you make friends in this community. It's just like rodeo. It's just a motorcycle community. Same thing with the Jeep community. You know, Jeep people like Jeep people, you know, and they, hey, let's exchange numbers. I'm going to go Jeeping this weekend. You want to go, you know, and same thing with the bikes. And what's fun for us is that traveling with the rodeo, we haul a bike with us, and we get the opportunity to ride our bike all over the country, and we get to see all these things that normal people, not rodeo people, normal people would have to make a trip to the Black Hills in order to ride their bike in the Black Hills, where we're coming through there on a rodeo, you know, to a rodeo, and we stop and we ride in the Black Hills.
Yeah, because you guys go to Sturgis.
We go to Sturgis.
I have never been, I mean, I've obviously been through Sturgis, and I've actually been through there on bike, you know,
during rally, but, yeah.
But that deal is, I want to go, like, go to the Buffalo Chip and, like, see some stuff, because I've never been. But everybody, actually, I can't say everybody, because I don't hardly know anybody that's ever been. I've had some people stop by, but the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally is unreal. To drive by.
So I think Sturgis is a town of about 2,500. And depending on the year, because anniversary years on the fives seem to be bigger years. The 75th, the 80th, the 85th are bigger years than the in-between years. But that town of 2,500 people will go anywhere from 600,000 to 1.2, 1.3 million bikers that all congregate in that area for the rally.
Oh yeah, they'll be from the Deadwood exit cleared all damn near Rapid City.
Yep. And oh yeah, all the way to Rapid City and from Belle Fourche all the way down to Custer and Hill City and all of that. Yeah.
And so you guys go up there and stay, right? I mean, cuz I've seen on your social media that you guys go and you're around all that. And
so My summer run runs from the beginning of June until the middle of October. And it's my summer run is divided in two halves. I have the first half that goes from June into the end of July. And then I have the video board hired at the Sturgis Rally. And I don't need a video crew for that. So I
set Oh, so you set your board up at the rally?
I set my board up at the rally.
Where at?
It's at a vendor park that's right there by the Harley dealership in Rapid City.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, so I've got my video board hired. My video board's working during the rally. And so,
well, that's nice. It kind of makes it kind of a paid good excuse. Vacation. Like, yeah, I got to go anyway. I'm working. And then you just go up there and cruise around.
Yep. And so I send the video crew home, which after being out on the road for 5 weeks, 6 weeks, almost 8 weeks, they're ready for a break.
Right.
You know, so I get to Rapid City, I put them on a plane, send everybody home, and then 3 weeks later, fly them back out to join up with me again, and then we go finish the second half of our summer run. But yeah, we spend 3 weeks right there in the Black Hills.
How long does the motorcycle rally last?
The motorcycle rally is a 10-day event, but it really, people start coming up about a week or a week and a half before the rally, because people want to come up to the Black Hills, but they want to beat the crowd. They want to miss the crowd. And so it ends up being about a 3-week run up there in the Rapid City area.
They have like bike shows during the day, and
they have bike shows. They have outdoor concerts.
Don't they
street
have big concerts?
They have there's big concerts, ticketed concerts at Buffalo Chip and at Full Throttle Saloon and at Glen.
Which is the is Buffalo Chip the biggest one? Because I mean, there's one that has like Rage Against the Machine and Kid Rock.
That would be the Chip.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be the Chip. And the Chip probably has the biggest production. I don't know that it is the biggest piece of real estate. I think the Full Throttle Saloon and the Pappy Hoel Campground is probably the biggest piece of real estate.
If you had to guess, how big would that be?
Probably about 80 acres.
No shit.
Yeah.
80 acres.
Yeah. Yeah, it's huge.
But besides just the campground, I mean, I know there's a bunch of campgrounds.
Oh, there's the Full Throttle Saloon and Pappy Hoel Campground are all one place. But Full Throttle Saloon is there. They have a grocery store on that piece of property. They have a laundromat on that piece of property. And they have, I don't know how many RV spaces on that piece of property. I mean, it's its own little community. It's its own self-contained community. And the Chip is the same way. The Chip, I don't know how big the Chip is, but if I was guessing and I have no numbers to really, reason to pick these numbers. If I was guessing, I would say Full Throttle Saloon is probably about 80 acres and the Chip's probably about 60 acres.
No shit.
Yeah,
see, I knew it was big because just driving by.
Mm-hmm.
Just cruising by, it is unreal.
Yep.
Because, you know, I work Rapid Central States Fair, and I'm going to Deadwood this year, and then you and me be at Burke, and,
yep,
you know, so we're up in that South Dakota area. So I see there's a ton of RV spaces, but is there like the old school bikers will come up just with a tent and sleep on the ground? And
so many places. As a matter of fact, the two streets, exit 30 is Lazelle Street, and exit 32 is Junction Street. And those two streets come and converge in Sturgis. And those are the two main drags. Those are the two main drags in and out of downtown Sturgis. The homes, the people that live in town there will rent out tent spaces in their front yards. Because people don't have to drive when they've been out at the bar drinking. They can walk the two or three or four blocks from the bar back, and it's a whole lot safer.
Is the security there just massive?
The police presence is huge, but there is a lot of tolerance from them. They understand that it's the rally and that it's.
I mean, with that many people, it ain't like you can, you know, come down on every single thing.
Well, there's. You're right. But there is a list of things that they are keeping an eye on.
Like, what are the big do's and don'ts?
Brandishing a firearm. And, I mean, almost everybody carries there. And you don't do that. Drugs. I mean, and they can tell when people are messed up on drugs and selling drugs. I mean, they have so many undercover cops working there. There's probably as many or more undercover cops there than you see cops in uniform.
No shit.
Yeah, and I mean U.S. Marshals. I mean Deputy U.S. Marshals. I mean, just there's so many. They come from all over the place. FBI agents. They're just everywhere, and they're watching for terroristic events. You know, terrorism. They're watching for all kinds of things. And so many stolen motorcycles get recovered there.
No.
So many.
So you hear that? If you steal a motorcycle, don't take it to Sturgis.
and they mean that.
You know, and maybe, like I said, I don't know anything about this, but you don't ever really hear of a lot of bad shit going on. I mean,
No. It's really.
I heard this. Now, tell me if I'm wrong on this, but they said at Sturgis, a lot of bikers kind of govern themselves.
They do. Well, the biker community does that. Yeah, and I don't mean bikers like outlaw bikers, and so there's a motorcycle community of people who ride motorcycles, and then there are those that make their living in a motorcycle group. I mean, people like the Hells Angels and the Bandidos.
Yeah.
That's completely different. And those organizations are referred to as one percenters. That is 1% of the motorcycle community, and the other 99% are not part of a part of an MC or a club or anything like that.
Yeah, we had the Hells Angels had their world run in Cody, Wyoming in 2006.
A lot of red and white there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They give us hat patches that said, support your local Hells Angels, and you know, nothing really bad. There's a lot of them. Scary looking some bitches.
Yep.
But nothing really happened. And everybody in Cody was like, oh no, it's the Hells Angels. But I mean, everybody was scared to death. And there was like all these stories about, oh, here come the Hells Angels. But nothing really happened.
And I'll tell you, you were talking about how they police their own and everything like that. Everybody knows that Sturgis is really Hells Angel territory. Okay? And the Hells Angels are respective of other motorcycle clubs, other groups. Okay? And so it's not like, oh, well, you can't come to Sturgis. You can't come to Sturgis. But there is one group that is not welcome. And one night we were down there on Main Street, and there was about six of them that showed up. And I mean, just brazenly walking right down Main Street through Sturgis. And it was crazy. All of a sudden, I mean, from out of nowhere, there was like 80 Hells Angels that had all of a sudden converged on the street. And the police were aware of this situation. The police knew that these people weren't supposed to be there. The police surrounded them to keep them separated from everybody else and escorted them out of Sturgis and made them leave. And then just as quickly, all of those Hells Angels, they all just disappeared right back into the crowd again, and you didn't see one anywhere. That was really eye-opening for Jackie and I when we were down there and we watched that happen.
Yeah, I think they used to have a topless steer riding there too.
Sturgis has...
I think it was the Birches took the steers over to it or something.
Sturgis has topless laws. And so you cannot walk around completely topless or completely nude. You have to...
Do people try that?
Oh, well, at the Chip and Full Throttle and stuff, at Glencoe, that is allowed. But in public, the girls can go topless, but they have to wear pasties. They have to be.
We don't
want
to see your nipples.
That's right. So
you be as naked as you want, as long as we don't see a nipple.
Well, yeah, and so, there's a lot of girls, there's a lot of women that go around with no top.
Is there any dirty, nasty old biker chicks with their tits out?
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, there's a lot of them that really shouldn't be running around with no shirt on. I'll tell you one of the funniest stories that happened at Sturgis, and it was the first year that Jackie and I went there. And the first year that we went, you know, we were like wide-eyed and just couldn't believe all these bikes and all these people and all these people having fun and partying and all of that kind of stuff. And not falling down drunk party. I mean, just people enjoying life. Exactly. Just having a good time. Well, this guy had a motorcycle that had a sidecar on it. And he had taken the sidecar body off of the frame and had put a round dance floor and a stripper pole on the sidecar. And as he was driving up and down Main Street, girls could not jump onto his stripper pole fast enough.
That guy's a genius.
It was so funny watching girls just... One girl would get off and another girl would jump on right away, and they're riding up and down Main Street on a stripper pole on a Harley.
I'll bet that guy never thought in a million years.
So I was telling you at the Chip, at Full Throttle, at Glencoe Campground, they have restricted access. So you have to buy a ticket or you have to buy a season pass in order to get into those campgrounds. And under those terms, that's not in public. So under those terms, the local laws don't apply. to the Chip, to the Full Throttle, to Glencoe.
Because they're privately owned entities.
They're privately owned and they're membership only. So it's not open to the public. It's membership only. You have to buy a ticket to get in there. You have to buy a membership. And so there is a lot wilder stuff that happens at those campgrounds as opposed to what happens in the town of Sturgeon.
So if you get back to your campground, you can pretty much do whatever you want because it's, I mean,
yep,
within reason.
Yep.
Since it's all, I mean, if you do drive your motorcycle around the campground, you know, there's not no one there to.
Oh, at Glencoe, there's a parade every night of motorcycles.
Really?
And it's guys on motorcycles and topless and nude girls behind them going. And it's a parade round and round and round. They go there at Glencoe every night. Every night during the rally.
Who's the Grand Marshal of that parade?
I don't know, but I'm going to nominate you, Justin. If you've never been to Sturgis.
I would love to go. I wish that I could ever get a chance, or me and Bone could both go, but just go set up and just have a, just push record and just tell us, and we would just say what we're seeing.
Mm.
You know, because yeah. I can't even imagine, like, dude, Kid Rock concerts are unreal. Like, I've been Kid Rock when he's a Greeley, stupid good.
Mm-hmm.
Put on a great show. And I mean, you talk about showing boxing, not to get people riled up. You go to a Kid Rock concert, you feel like you're on top of the world when you go to leave. You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, then they got all the good old rock bands. And it would just be fun just to go people watch and just record on what we're seeing and where we're going. You know, kind of cover the story of Sturgis.
Yeah.
Because it is such a mystery to me. Because I think you're the only person I know that owns a Harley. And for two, I don't really know anybody that's even been, you know?
Yeah.
But I've seen stuff to make me go, what? But to me, it's like one of those things that you look at the Sturgis and you would never know unless you go. Like you just don't, like going to Pendleton Roundup. Until you go, I can't sit here and tell you what it's about.
And do it justice. My wife also said the same thing about Calgary Stampede.
Yeah.
Never been there either. There is no way to describe Calgary that would do it justice. You just have to go. But it is like the Disneyland of the rodeo world. I mean, it is such a cool experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to go experience that at least once.
I've never been to Sturgis or Calgary. Might have to try to go to both.
I'm lucky. Been to both. I did Calgary for 14 years.
Yeah.
I've been 12 years now at the Sturgis Rally. This last year, I got to go to, well, actually the last 2 or 3 years, I've gotten to go to Pendleton.
Yeah.
Because I'm in Othello that week. And we're dark on, we have a demo derby on Wednesday, and then we rodeo Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're dark on Thursday. And so we'll run down on Thursday to Pendleton and
wow.
go catch the rodeo down there. Yeah, it's a great experience. And I had never been to the Letterbuck Room until this last year.
Letterbuck Room would be like the Sturgis of the room where the fun, the topless deal where there's all the signs said, please leave all of your underwear on or you'll be asked to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that. When I was there, the Letterbuck Room wasn't like that, but I didn't stay late. Like you, I don't really go to the bars anymore at all.
Yeah, I'm not a bar guy, but
no.
At Pendleton, they have a sign that says, please avoid the OTPHJ. You ever heard of that?
No.
Over the pants hand job. OTPHJ.
I don't think I saw that sign.
Yeah, you do, if you see somebody get an OPTHJ, you stayed in the Letterbuck Room too long. Well, I tell you what, Ben, thank you for stopping by. We've covered everything from DJing to video production to rodeo production to bikers to tits out to OTPHJs. So it's been fun. Thanks for coming on and thanks for doing what you do. If you get out to a rodeo or look up High Def Rodeo, they got a great deal going. I get to work with them sometimes throughout the summer, and we're here in Austin. So be sure to check them out. Do a great job. We're glad to have you on today, and I hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to check out rodeopatch.com for all of your rodeo patches, whether that be hats, shirts, whatever you need. Be sure to check them out, rodeopatch.com. Don't forget, get your Gold Buckle beer. An ice cold, beautiful, delicious Gold Buckle beer. Gold Buckle Super Light. We're rocking and rolling. It's about to be summertime. You'll want to get some beer. So on behalf of our guests, we're going to leave you with a little something for our friend from San Antonio. Thanks for stopping by, Ben.
Deep within my heart lies a melody, a song of old San Antonio, where in dreams I live with a memory beneath the stars all alone. Well, it was there I found beside